my distinct pleasure to introduce one of my favorite little nudgekins, Miss Leah W. from Visalia.
Hey, Leah.
I can do it in a second turn, but this is a whole other realm. I guess to start off, my childhood was well, lots of things that I don't remember. I was really sick when I was little. I had valley fever and scarlet fever. At a very young age, a lot of pneumonia. One of my fondest memories is, I have memories from right before kindergarten, just taking the buses, every bus, everywhere, any bus, and people looking at me different if I had no hair, if I had no hair. And I remember my childhood being sick and people looking at me. You know, I always felt way different than everybody else, especially the girls. Didn't share any girls, so. I had to be wearing a dress, getting on the bus, and
your son's so cute. The dress is with flowers on it.
You know, it's crazy. I used to get that, my mom used to get that so much, and I would just look at them like, really, are you serious right now? But yeah, I always felt completely different than everything else. One of my fondest memories is first day of kindergarten, my sister dropping me off and like, and I'm like, why? You know? And right from the gate, the teacher, once again, I felt singled out, felt made me feel even more different than I already felt, you know? She's like, introduced me to the class and, shared with the class that I didn't have cancer, that I was a girl, and bullying was going to be tolerated. You know, people were going to be tolerated. And I'm like, that thing's not true. They really are now. I kind of hung out by myself. I stayed by the classroom, did a little whatever they do. I picked on a lot throughout school. I really picked on this whole lot of this. I got called a boy a lot, which I had no problem with. I didn't really hang out with girls, because girls cost a lot, they didn't want to, I guess I didn't have no hair, so I couldn't relate to them, or couldn't, I don't even know, but beyond me, I always felt something about yeah, she could say I was a lot depressed as a child. My self-esteem was low. I fast forward to the fourth grade. It was the year that it snowed here. It was like 95 or something like that. My mom and my dad were at work. And my dad had a little airplane bottles, and I don't know how many I drank, and I don't know how fast I drank them, but I know I drank them, and my mom came home, and I kind of just went over to her, you know, and she turned away, and she was, everybody was mad. And my old brother was just, like, the silent, he just sits there in silence, and out of the way, and quiet and out of the way, so he's like, I don't know. And the other two were gone. but I was grounded. But I'm a baby and I get away with everything, so I wouldn't really call it grounding. I did no wrong. And yes, today I hung out with didn't hang out with people my age, kids my age at all. I would always strive to hang out with the older people. They were a little more mature when it came to my condition, you know. I didn't get them made fun of me and things like that. And that's just if there were my age, I started beating them up. I had told them, my brother and sister, if you don't start defending yourself, we're going to beat you up. And they did. They found my way home to school, and they're like, Dave, why don't you do nothing? Why? They're like, you can't beat me up. And so I started beating up people. It felt good. I had the attitude where you're going to single me out and make fun of me, I'm gonna beat you up and make you look pitiful or weak, and I felt strong. I felt good about that. I thought it was defending myself or being, you know, showing that I'm almost showing you, you know, and creating the image for myself of, and I was like, nobody wanted to mess with me kind of thing, like, oh, fuck her, you know, so after a while, like, even if they did talk about me, they wouldn't do it so openly anymore, you know. And then when I found out, I showed them, you know, I was a tough girl, ran with the older kids, mostly boys, and about 12 years old, I would drink a little bit here and there. Probably about a year after my first drink, I was hanging out with the older people at the park, and they were trying to get money together and for alcohol, and I was in school, and I went home and stole my oldest brother's money, and I guess I wasn't 16 because they found out. When I got home, I had trouble, busted off, and my gay mom, you know, your child takes so much of your public jobs. But they didn't know that I snuck back in the back door, and I was feeling gypsy-ish or whatever. You know, I snuck back in the back door, went back to my room, and had a big comforter, and I laid parallel to the pillows underneath the comforter. Couldn't even tell I was there, and I was like, you know, I was already feeling myself or whatever you want to call it, so I fell asleep. I was there for hours and days. And the cops are out looking for me, and my mom's out looking, everyone's out looking for me and stuff. And I woke up and looked outside, and I was like, I felt like what I wanted to do again. You know, about 12 years old, about 12 and 6th grade, we moved to this neighborhood, and still hung out with older people. My brother and my sister were already on to middle school, got the blood in the floor, and still hung out with their friends, fighting out with them. started drinking more. My drinking progressed from stealing money to stealing scooters and selling scooters to make good people, you know, get money to give to the bum at the store for some alcohol, usually blue farms. And like that for a couple years, and then I went back to the stealing thing. So I started doing things like selling oregano and marijuana mixed together. and they would buy it. from that to letting my, I was a tough girl, charging my brother's friend to hurt themselves with my head as hard as a rock, and it couldn't hurt me. So go ahead and try to punch me in the head. That was the, you know, the stupid things. As teenagers, people have stupid things to do, just the dumbest things they do. And that was one of the dumbest things to do. You can't, if you hurt yourself punching me in the head, go ahead and pay me. Go ahead. And I would do that, I swear. And my brother's friend would pay. And they would hurt themselves too. And I'd laugh. And, I thought it was funny, and probably created some brain damage, I'm sure. And that's how I would get my money for my drinking. So, I don't know how long, but that went like that for a long time. Kind of just chance, you know, as you get older in high school, all that, you know, moved to LA, first meet my dad, when I first met my dad, and, because we found out that it's really hard to steal alcohol from a from a black man. He just says, "Women are straight." You can't replace with water. He said, "No." And from there, I went back home. I ran back home like Ali. The craft works and like, then the first kid I met was overage man. He was 23, I was 16. Had my first kid. He had autism. I didn't drink with him. His autism and rad, and he had an intestinal problem as well. I'm not sure if that's due to my drinking, but for the first 2 years of his life, he was just me. I had no help. My aunt, he loved me a little bit. But I was scared. If I did what I do best, drink, use, whatever. And then, afterwards, let his dad, or his dad's friend, in an abusive relationship, had a child out of that relationship. And then, and my third son, I wasn't really a good mom at all. I was a horrible mom. I was the mom that abandoned her kids, left my son with their stepdad, was not really their father. Not even blood related. I would disappear for a month at a time. My family, I would just go off the grid completely. I didn't want to deal with nobody bullshit, and I knew it was best for me, you know. I was comfortable at the river. That was my home. That was where I was accepted, for who I was, right? Yeah, because that's what I've been searching for my whole life, you know, be accepted as I was, for who I was, you know. And that's where I thought I found it, you know. And I thought that was a life, you know. I thought I was happy with people loving me, or, you know, and looking out for me there. I quickly realized, well, not quickly, but I had my first daughter, her dad, dealt with this shit. Tried to piss him off, like I'm dating someone else, just piss him off. that didn't work out. that didn't last long at all. I got married in October, was separated by April. I still married, by the way. I haven't heard of bullshit. Some of this. But, then I got pregnant with my second daughter. And, I realized the people all around, the things I was doing. Well, first I was kind of dry drunk on that time, and I was using other substances because I'm afraid of jail. And back in 2012, I had to go to jail because I got so drunk I was walking down the street stopping no walkers. When I came to, I was being in jail. And I was like, hell yeah. It's not for me. That was not where I was at. And the dude that was in there was not like me. I was not like them. I did not fit in. It was not going to happen. I don't care how hard I acted. I wasn't going to do it, you know. And the only way I could keep myself from blacking out and doing wild things if I drank, I was either slutty or being someone that was getting addressed. There was no in between. And so I stopped drinking for a while, and I started using my substances to keep me from drinking. I got pregnant with my daughter, my baby. It's not enough. Like, you know, I wasn't getting the satisfaction that I was searching for. So I started drinking. I started drinking heavy. The people I was around were willing to, you know, share with me or whatever, and I don't know what happened, but there was just a night where everything hit me, got really drunk, laying my tent, and whole tent was spinning. I was looking up and I was just like, what? All these thoughts were going through my head, and God reached out to me, you know, the way I heard someone's voice who at the time I didn't care for, didn't like him very much, didn't want to hear anything he had to say. I thought he was rude, and something he said ran me out of the meeting, you know, and that same exact thing that he said is what I heard him, and so I walked myself across town, went to my friend's house, and then from there I walked to the mom's brother, it was a book study meeting on Friday, and my sister was there, and a couple other people, and from that meeting I walked to New Heights, did my assessment, and they're like, they're doing this assessment, they're like, okay, go get your stuff. And, he had another hike by 6 p.m. or something like that, and I was like, I'm not going to do nothing, because if I go get anything, I'm telling you right now, I'm not going to go, not at all. So I went with clothes on my back, straight to another night, the bus straight from there to there. I had to go, did not quite explain it. There's no way I was going to go back to where I was, because I wouldn't have that. And I at least, at the time, in my head, I at least wanted to have her so that I can give her up for adoption. That's what I had set in my mind. That's what I wanted to do. I just knew that she was going to be the most awesomest baby in the world, and I knew I wouldn't. I knew I was going to be able to do it. So I had set my mind that I was going to get clean and do what I had to do to stay clean of her until the process is done, you know. But that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to give her up. And crazy thing about now is she's awesome. She's so smart. And she's beyond smart. She's not even 2 yet. Of her ABC. And the next time I want to sing with me too. And queer too. And it's crazy that I even thought that I was even somewhere along the line, before I had her, I decided that wasn't going to happen. And I wish I could say that I stayed sober at that point, but I didn't. I still had that feeling where I didn't want to live. I wasn't good enough. I wasn't ever going to be good enough. And my whole life, that's what I wear. That's what I show myself. You know, that's what I allow myself to feel about myself, like that. And I started to clean the room. I went to Texas. I couldn't drink the best. Because all the gas stations were drive-thrus. So that was hard. I had the worst thing that happened in my life. When I came back, I didn't know what happened. What happened was the fellowship, everything and everybody in it. I just took a step back and looked at what I had, you know. I just couldn't imagine, like, if I didn't have my roots planted in the fellowship where I would be, because I'm that type of them, that will, this is, I'll go home with someone quick in it, you know, over a simple feeling. And I wish I could say that I started loving myself right away, and I found peace and all that, but I just knew I needed to hang on. And the people around me reassured me that, you know, that they were there for me. The one, Bill, my sponsor had, I had to let go of some service position that I had, because I was secretary. I was the chef of the same event, actually. And the spring of sobriety event, and I had to go on during the meeting and tell everybody that I do that. I stepped down from my position, and I I couldn't go into that meeting without calling Bill and telling him before it happened, because I didn't want him to find out over a meeting, even though I wanted to personally, tell him myself, you know, before the meeting, because I felt like we had a kinship that, you know, I value friendship very much, and he's always been there with me. He wanted me to show me how to count my days. You know, and so I called him, hey, what happened? And he said, well, you know, my friend, so, let me tell you a story. And then he's like, well, so you had your son, your child, you know, your child runs out in the middle of the road, traffic or whatever, you know, and you get your child and they, you know, you're yelling at him, you know, because they think they're in trouble, you know. You're yelling at them because you're scared, you know, but they think they're in trouble, you know, for really, you're just scared for them, for running out in the middle of the road, something that happens to them. It's not exact words, he was just like, told me that, so, just want you to know that we love you and care for you, we want you to take it, you know? I took that to heart. I still do. I remember that every day because, I always felt alone, singled out. It was very different from everybody else. And everything that I was thought I had when I was homeless, you know, I had this fellowship, you know, for the people that actually care and love me and want me to be safe, you know, and, that day Bill showed me that. I'm very grateful that he opened a big old flood of a mission girl to buy. I play a hard ass. Pretty so I think, but really I'm soft. I'm a loving girl in the state. So there my new journey started, you know, having sponsors. After a while, after repetitively reaching my fourth step and going back, I got a new sponsor and started working my steps again, and one of the things that I really held on to was the Valley Group community. Because they say that, you know, the higher power of God, good according direction, that was that. For a long time, that being said, that meaning was, it was my higher power for a long time. You know, it kept me grounded, and it revitalized my week. It boosted my motivation for keeping on the right track. It did me what I couldn't do for myself every week. And so I started loving myself. And I found my own God's good orderly direction, you know, with God and my understanding. And in no matter what, every week, if I have something else going on, I do what I have to do. Service has been a big part of my life. And Valley Group, I try to do the most I can to that position to steer. It was my higher power for a long time, so I feel like I pay for it, but no matter if it, no matter what, you know, I got school, and on Wednesdays now, and I go to school, and I do study time in, and I go to my daughter's in childcare, and no matter what, if I have to, if I'm walking, I go to school, get the baby from childcare, bike, stroller, baby, pushing it into the meeting, you know, because they're the chief secretary of the meeting, and it feels like a lot. Sometimes it feels like a lot more than a lot, but it's worth it, because I show up, I feel all of the love and all the energy and all the time in the room, you know. It's a wonderful feeling. I feel like that feel puts me to my. I like going to community. I like feel challenges me a lot, which is a good thing. But the last year, 7 months and 5 days have been wonderful. My life has been so much better. I can't. My daughter is wonderful. I got to experience everything with her because I was so loose. I get to be her mommy, you know? And I'm not running. I'm not pawning her off with somebody else or something else, you know? And it's breathtaking, you know, the difference between her and my other children, you know, when they're growing up. The impact, strengthening using versus not, is big, you know? I wish I could have been different boys than it's done. You know, I can only be feeling what I'm doing now to make that little amends with my kids, to strive for better. Well, yeah, service is a big thing to me. Really big thing to me. I don't have a car, and it gets really hard sometimes, but I still do my best to do what I can. Whether it's walking, having my life, whatever it is, you know, I still do my best to do that. That's what keeps me so paying contact people. That was a big thing for me too, you know, being afraid to pick up the phone and call somebody. Or even, you may think it's stupid, or you may think nobody wants to be bothered by it, you know, but the results are so opposite from what you could conjure in your mind, that's for sure. I had to call a time where one of the first times where I had all my kids at once, and I was totally freaked out. And I think I was about 6 months over, and I was totally freaking out. They were excited. They were all with mommy and each other, you know, so they were excited, and I was like, going to pull my hair out that I didn't have. So it's better, you know. it was like 12 o'clock, 12:30 at night. I was like, go to bed already, dude. And I was like, you guys can call me 8:00. I don't know. So I group chatted a bunch of women who I knew were mothers. They were like grandmothers. And I was like, what the shit do I do? I'm going crazy, you know. And they were like, honey, you didn't turn. I was like, oh, says you. And did that work for you? Because it's not working for me. I thought I would be as friendly as me, and they just, you know, started talking to me and just going back and forth. And before I knew it, I look up, and they're all asleep. And I was like, seriously, I was like, wow. I was like, that's all it took for me just to calm down and kind of not ignore them, feel be present, but just calm down and just be catastrophized, you know, put into, yeah. I didn't even know they fell asleep. And that was the first time I knew to call this, you know, when apologizing for you. I'm sorry. Honey, no. Like, that's exactly what you're supposed to do. And what I would use to do, what you're supposed to do, is go get a drink, right? No. That has changed me. That's one of the wonderful things. I just think it's funny that it was, we're so amped up and want to send it out. It was funny. I mentioned I'm going to pull hair out too. I was like, I don't know how moms do this shit. You know? I still ask myself that sometimes. I'm just like, I don't care. You know? And I get frustrated, but at the end of the day, I'm like, it's all worth it, you know? I'm just very grateful that I get to be here and very grateful that I can speak every week and every day pretty much, you know, the same faces, getting more time. It helps me stay safe. It gives me drive. I can't say much about steps on step four right now, but I do know that steps two and three are definitely a foundation for the rest of it. They keep you grounded. Those two steps are steps that I continuously come back around to every day. You know, I have to surrender every day. I have to let go and let go out a whole lot too. A whole lot, you know. I used to have this little car thing let go of my daughter's little tin. I would just write it down and put it in there. I ran out of it. I can't afford and it's not all about you. That's for sure. I used to think that everything was about me. I would make everything about me. It wasn't, you know? I most definitely am grateful for Bill. He's my superhero. he definitely has a certain way of way of words. And the way he gets you through them. Good thing to have. He's got to change your mind.
Probably not. Good luck.
I'll be the word going on there. One of the big things, which is still kind of happening in my relationship with women. That's that part, right? Because that's what I never did. I never went out with girls and they didn't want to. They were all mean and they all made fun of people and they all had hair and they didn't. So I had nothing in common with them, right? I avoided them at all costs and like my friend here told me, that's your guys, that's your buddy. That's wonderful. But would she think that she needed? And he's right. I recall there was a time where there was a ordinance exchange thing and I was invited to, but I couldn't get someone to cover my position. So I couldn't go, and when I went on the Facebook later, I saw her being all butthurt because there were pictures of stuff on the light. Like, you can butt for her, you didn't want to go anyway, right? Oh my God. That's still a process, but I do have my select emails like Amber over there. that I love and fans. And I those relationships helped me. They helped me a lot. I am more the Lady Stay than I ever was. That's for sure. Well, I think that's all I got. I could say anything to you, any summer, anything. But they all could say. So, faith is a miracle happens to me. In my experience, it's not a miracle, it is a bunch of, you know, and being sober for one more day is a miracle. And definitely a miracle to me, because do everything and anything. I know that I don't have to think no matter what. No matter what happens, no matter what goes on, anything and everything that I would drink for, I don't have to. And always someone I can call. There's always a step to that. And a prayer. There's tons of prayers too. And my favorite is there's there's always another option, and you don't have to drink.
So. I'm just real. I'm not going to be able to fight this temptation to ask you guys this. I'm curious because I think this is a great demonstration of the delusion that many of us have. Is there one of you out there tonight that sees this lovely creature and thinks she's not enough? Not one of them. It's unanimous. You're enough. But I wouldn't take their word for it. They're alcoholic. This is a special lady here. Hey, we are now going to start the discussion portion of the meeting. We would like to hear from as many different people as possible, so we ask you please to limit your sharing to allow for this. I'm going to now turn the meeting back over to the marvelous Miss Leah. And here's a list. We have people online as well as people in person.
Wait, Liz, I want to hear from David B.
David B, online. Please unmute yourself.
Hello everyone, my name is David, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi David!
I just would like to say that I am honored to be part of AccuPol 49's host committee, which is being held in your guys' hometown this year in March 24th through the 27th. And is there a specific topic? I had my Bluetooth headphone on, so I couldn't really hear. Hello?
God's will for the topic.
Oh, would you guys just like to hear me share my experience, strength, and hope, or?
Sure. Yes.
Okay. Well, a little bit about myself. I have 19 months of sobriety. Sobriety date, May 21st, 2020. I've been an alcoholic since high school. And I've been a functioning alcoholic, I think by far is the worst, because you tell yourself every day that, you know, you got this, and it's just ignorance, you know, and trying to justify to yourself that you're not an alcoholic and you just know how to manage it, which was totally the opposite. My life was unmanageable, trying to manage my drinking habit, and it just, my life was a total chaos, and I never really took the time to sit back and wonder why. Like, I just thought that I had everything under control, and finally, you know, after getting a DUI, I finally buckled down and told myself, you know what, I need help. And so I went and got help, and I've been sober ever since. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor, and I have a sponsee now, and I joined AccuPol, and I'm just staying linked in. And I think that if you finally come to that point in your life where you've had enough of the chaos, you come to that breaking point and you reach out and you do exactly what the 12 steps and the 12 traditions is all about. And if you set that determination and set the bar high for yourself to want to give it a shot, it will work for you. This program has been designed by Bill, and people in the past have worked it. And going to meetings and hearing those cliches the first couple of times going, I was like, all right, whatever. It went through. I was kind of incoherent, but then I kept coming back. I always heard the older people with time say, just keep coming back. So I came back, and I came back, and next thing you know, going on almost 2 years now, my life is manageable now, and I've had that spiritual awakening and experience, and I am in tune with my higher power on a day-to-day basis, and my life is work, AA, my higher power, and my family. And I don't think that, without a doubt, that without my higher power in AA, that I would be in the position where I'm at right now. I'm a foreman at my job. I have better PR skills now. My communication with people outside of work and family has gotten way better. Like, I'm not saying everything is fine and dandy, but I know how to delegate my life, and I know how to delegate things around me without having to pick up a bottle now, you know. And being of service is so gratifying. Like, I can't fathom I just can't express the gratitude I have for Tulare County and the UAA members in Tulare County on how sweet and how willing you guys are of being of service. And it's not just here, but it's nationwide. This is a huge thing, and it's just, I wouldn't trade it in for the world, you know. And I like going to meetings and hearing people's stories, not because it inspires me to do better, but to hear other people's shares of their, and hearing people come from all different walks of life, and we come together to get experience, strength, and hope from the next alcoholic, you know. And yeah, I can go on and on. I don't want to take too much time. I know there's probably like a timer, five minutes, but this won't be the only time you guys will see me. I will be in Visalia, Tulare County, in the future to be in person in meetings. Thank you for having me on here, and thanks for calling on me.
By the way, David mentioned this, but he's volunteer coordinator for the AccuPol conference that's coming up, and he's looking for people that can fill a one-hour shift. Kind of, they call it security, but it's really kind of giving people directions, like which way to the bathroom, which way to the different rooms at the convention center. So if you have an hour that you can give to that event at the end of this month, please be sure to get in touch with them. And if you need to know how to get in touch with them, let me or Leah know. We both know how to get you better. Okay, thank you.
Amber K.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
No. Oh, I'm thank you for your share, girl. Yeah, I've been very interested in the before. I've been listening to you before. I've never sat in a meeting where I can see the person talking. So I have to work on my acting skills, right? Yeah, I'm so proud of you, girl. I remember when you were pregnant. This is your whole journey, and you and that baby girl, Maria, the bond that you guys have, and I love looking into your face when you're holding her, and you know you're doing the fucking deal, you know, and being a great mom. and so I'm just so proud of you. Just watching you be resilient and, you know, going out. I respect that because I, you know, I don't know. I have the balls to be able to do that. You know, that takes a lot of courage to be able to reset and come and talk to all your friends and let them know, hey, you know, I relapsed. And, I'm blessed to see your journey, and I'm thankful to have you in my life. And you can come hang out with me anytime, okay? We always try to hang out too, and we're big, but we're still such good friends, right? together, and that keeps us seeing each other. And I'm so thankful for that. Sometimes I'll see my program friends more in the meetings and stuff than I ever do any people outside of work. Or I had like one other friend I actually hang out with. All my friends now are people. So I always love you. You're literally like my favorite person to see sometimes, and I love you. I didn't know that, like, the chair you're sharing with you and, like, you know, your personality, you know, and you're so vibrant. And I want you to know that that just shines through, you know, and so own that shit. You're beautiful. And you're feisty and freaking fantastic and yourself and you're transparent. And whenever I'm around you too, I love when I'm around you because I can be my absolute self. Right? That's great. That's such a gift. Because I can just be me. That is a beautiful gift. So thank you for that. And I'm super grateful. But he's just blessing me this amazing, it's an inside job, you guys. Once you start working on yourself, I'm not really any of this. You know, the initial first year, it's so different. My life was like, wow, it's so fucking different. You clean the garbage out and you start working on yourself and you go to guests and you keep in service and keep going to meetings. And I am absolutely convinced that every single person I've ever heard the program, speaker tape, I'm always on YouTube listening to stuff. I'm always looking at stuff. Everybody says it just keeps getting better. And I fucking believe that now because you know what I think that. And just even recently, the more that I've spent time working on myself, still more settled in myself than I've ever felt before. And it's such a relief. And I now know I've got to give everything to God. So in the morning, I want to go in my head and I'm like, God, I can't. I don't want it. I don't want that anymore. And that feeling, it grows. It just grows. And so today is the same. It's almost like when you work out. I know. And I accept it for the future. Every day is not perfect, but this program gives me the tools that I need to get through the day in a different way. You know, I give it to God. I try not to hold resentment. You know, I try to be good with people. I try to love myself. And throughout that process, I'm becoming a better me. And I'm so grateful. You know, if I wasn't an alcoholic, I probably would have never worked on myself like this. And now I see the benefit of it. I don't want to stop. Now I just want to keep on learning. And I heard one guy say, a lot of successful people, instead of entertainment, they choose education. Right? So when we're listening to speaker tapes, and we're doing other things, and we're reading the book, and we're picking up things that we know that we need to do, we use the program in our life. That's what's going on. And it's such a beautiful process. So today I'm a grateful alcoholic, and I'm really glad you guys are here. Yeah, thank you for your share.
Thank you, Andrew, so much. I'm going to go with my new friend, Erica.
Hi, Erica.
So, yeah.
of that. Even sometimes now, with those mothers, you know, when they were little, they had also hard. I've really bogged down my life right now, you know, like, I work the steps and, I pray all the time because that's, like, what I have to do is turn to God every day and answer, injuries. And, you know, it'd be cool if I cross over and, but it's not always. I know it's much easier than it was when I was, but, like, that was my main priority, and everything else is just, like, whatever, I don't care about that. So, you know, just thankful, and I've done a lot of that in your teaching friends about that. That's cool. It makes me feel better, it makes those people feel better. Thank you.
Gary, Jerry online? Jerry, would you like to share it? Can I mute yourself? And we'll come back to Jerry.
Okay.
Oh, come on.
Get in your head.
Tell us your name, Corey.
Corey.
Hi, Corey.
Let me hear
Corey. Did you hate me?
Never.
I'm glad you're here, Corey. Thanks for being here.
Love you, Corey.
Never. I'm Pam. I'm not calling.
Thanks for
Hi. I love you. you're one of the first, you and Bill are like one of the first people I met after we kind of started residential, so. You specifically gave me like that sense of like, I don't know, the first time you walk into the room and everybody's happy to see you. And then the second time you walk in and they're even happier to see you again. And every single time it seems like you're really, and that's not something that I've experienced in my life. You know, before I came to the fellowship, I always felt like I was a burden on people. Like it was just like an inconvenience to be around. Like, and you two specifically, like Valley Group is like really near and dear to my heart on Wednesdays. And it's something I always look forward to going to. That's something that's prioritized on my schedule. But yeah, I have, what did we say? I'll be like 6 months on Thursday. I just recently started CCAP Academy becoming a drug and alcohol counselor. It's more exciting. I just got registered on Friday, so I am a drug and alcohol counselor. And you know, I agree with Amber. You know, it just you think falling into place that didn't fall into place before. Never once in my life have things fallen into place ever. Like it's just one of those. I've always had the mentality of like, if it works for everybody in this room, something will happen when it comes to. And it always has until now. You know, things seem to fall into place now. So, it's really just blessing after blessing. It's little things, you know, like my grandma called me the other day and, you know, made plans with me for June for my daughter. That's not, I mean, like it's March, no, March or not. But it tells me that she has the faith that, you know, I'll still be on the right path. I just finished my step two and went into step three. So, and I'm just really grateful to be where I am right now. I know that without everybody in the group, that's all I know.
Thanks, sir.
Overexcited every week I see you.
Yeah.
Somewhere.
I'm
That's right.
I want to see people on the same, but I want to see if there's anybody online, because I have anybody online, if there's anyone online that wants to share.
Desiree Alcoholic Addict?
Desiree!
Hello. Thank you for your sharing, Leah. You know, it's, what really stood out to me too, I mean, a lot of things did, you know, I always like hearing shares because they're motivational to me, since I'm fresh in the program and doing step one right now with my sponsor, but, you know, I never gave that opportunity, you know, that AA has to offer, you know, that, the, you know, working the steps and all that, and, I remember I always used to be so negative and not want to be here, you know, and I honestly, hearing all these stories, it's like, you never think that anybody else feels the same way, you know? I always used to pray to God to not keep me here, you know? I was very suicidal. But luckily, I never actually did anything, you know? I never had the courage, even though I was under the influence, to actually take my life. But, you know, I'm happy to be here now, you know? And it's incredible how we can start feeling that way, you know? It's very different to me, and I'm glad I decided to get a sponsor, you know, to let myself get help, you know, because I couldn't do it alone anymore. And I'm very reluctant when it comes to asking for help. I don't like asking for help, you know. And now I actually reach out, you know. I actually reach out to my sponsor. I'm actually like coming to these meetings. I'm actually putting in work, you know, because that's what I hear. We got to do the work too, you know. We can't just expect somebody to do it for us. So I'm glad, thank you for your share. It was very motivational, like all shares are, you know? Thank you. That's all I got, and I'll keep coming back with that. Thank you.
It's a rough thing, because she was the one on the couch with my mother and I, through my horrible journey into college.
It's a rough thing, I'm not going to call it. So I have been in recovery about 4.5 years. It'll be 5 years in October in recovery, and I'll have 4 years sober in August. Mm-hmm. So I've got a little over 3 years right now. In that time, I did 16 months of residential recovery because I did 4 months New Visions, and then I went to the Rescue Mission. I did another 8 months of year-long program, and then I transferred back over to CPRS. And so I got about a good almost 16 months of residential treatment before I went to a sober living environment. And then I became a volunteer, just putting in so many hours every other night. I would volunteer, and I'd come home, sleep for 8 hours, get back my bag, and do it again. So, you know, my full time position, so I didn't have a job. And then I started interning, and I got hired on. I became a drug and alcohol counselor. I'm also an RDT. And I am the manager of Sober Living House. So I have a full-time part-time job with Sober Living and counseling. And God will my life. It's been incredible. But it's because I've never let recovery go. Since I started, I haven't. So I get paid to be in recovery. For sobriety, and God is amazing. My mom's like, you were so hard. You're saving crime. Yeah. And I was like, well, Mom, you're going to be this with the labor. You're going to be a better shape. I didn't know my best self. Yeah, I don't think so. I'm like, yeah, I think it is, Mom. But, yeah, that's all I got, and I'm glad to see you and how you're doing it. So we're very cool that my mom put me off early so I could be here.
And I had a huge reaction to my preterm labor and then I woke up. She's like, I'm going to the hospital. She's like, yeah. That was funny.
I felt bad.
I guess I will call on,
David Alcoholic?
Oh, David!
Thank you for your sharing, Leah. I don't think I've heard your whole story before.
No.
You, the part of your story you mentioned in, that you relapsed before your fourth set. And, that was something that I went through as well. After the fact, I realized that, what I had was fear going into that fourth set. And then a member in these rooms had pointed out to me, if I was having fear going into that fourth step, I really hadn't done the third step. Right? I really hadn't fully trusted God and said, God, I trust that you're going to take care of it before me. So that was a good lesson for me, right? Because it's something I didn't recognize, and I ended up going out over it. The other thing that came to mind while you were sharing, a long time ago, I was working in an office, and these ladies in the office assistant's pool, the door was always open because it was a place where people walk in and out, and one day I'm in there, and they asked the rent amongst themselves, hey, do you mind if we close the door? And I'm like, okay, whatever. And the room was stuffy, so I'm not sure why they would do this. Well, they closed the door, and it turned out they taped the poster on the inside of the door. You could only see when they closed the door, and you're on the inside of the room. The poster said, everyone brings joy to this room. Some by entering it, and others by leaving it. And you're one of those people, when I walk into the room, it seems to me a little bit of joy has entered the room. I was probably, in the depths of my alcoholism, I was one of those people who brought joy by leaving. But I do think that today, I have an opportunity to try to bring a little bit of joy, try to be nice, be friendly, and I was unable to find that while I was in my alcoholism. I was just miserable, and I was making sure to share. But today, I'm happy that, and I love the fact that AA showed me a path to get out of where I was. That's enough out of me, David.
Thank you.
Thank
you. You always bring me joy. Still?
Okay. Hi, Brandon. I'm Phil Hatchman.
Phil.
Hi, Bill. And, Leah, Lydia said something that I thought I'd comment on. Talked about, there at the end, she talked about letting go and letting God. And I don't know about any of you guys, but in fact, sometimes still, when I hear people say that, I kind of scratch my head and I go, just what exactly the hell does that mean? Right? I mean, tell me mechanically, what does it mean to let go and let God? And, the funny thing is it occurred to me that something happened today that really fits that description. Actually, it's been happening over the last couple of days. I started a different job about 6 months ago, and I'm really, really fortunate. I've worked with some smart and some helpful and some kind people. And I work for a company that is compensating me very well. They provide for me and my family in a really good way. And so I really should be very grateful to be in the position that I'm in. And I had a job very much like this where I was perhaps even overcompensated, if you want to know the truth. And things changed and that job went away. And then I found myself in two other jobs that were not good experiences, you know, and it's easy for me to forget just how many good things I have in my life. So on Friday, I had been trying for a couple weeks now to get my boss's attention to get him to help me with something. And it's kind of a big task, and if I pull this task off, it's going to compensate me handsomely. I mean, it's definitely worth my effort. But my boss happens to also be the guy that runs the company, and so he seems to just consistently be busy with more important things, and I can't get his attention. And he's asked me to try to send him a text to explain the situation that I need help with, and I just can't put it in a text. It's just too much, you know? And so on Friday, I found myself kind of complaining and also thinking, you know what? If he's not going to help me, then screw him. I'm going to do it my way. I don't know if you guys ever, you know, kind of take that attitude. that's never, not one time ever, served me well. It's never worked out good for me to do that. But my instincts are still, those are my base core instincts, right? If I can't get something the way I think I should get it, then by God, I'm going to make it the way I think it ought to be. And so I start thinking about those things. And last night I was journaling, because that's something that I've learned to do here. I make it a regular practice almost every single day. There are rare days that I miss that right now. And I was writing out this problem about my boss, and what came out of the end of the pencil was that my boss wanted me to send him the information in a text, and for me, in my mind, I just couldn't comprehend that that's not a possibility. I just can't do that. And what changed my mind, and I this is how I see letting go and letting God, is that my task for the next couple days, if it takes me that long, I should get this done tomorrow. My task, figure out how to put it in the text. What are you asking me to do? That's my job. He's paying me very, very handsomely. I should just do what he asks me to do. I shouldn't insist that he change his life to fit the way I think things ought to be done. You know what I mean? And that awareness, I think it comes from a power outside of me, because I don't have that instinct. And so when you talk about letting go and letting God, I think for me sometimes what that means is that I have to quit trying to do things my way, and as impossible as it may be to consider a different way, I really have to challenge myself to figure that out. And I don't yet know how I'm going to do it, because it's this big story, and there's all these variables. And they're important. I mean, it's a big project. And I don't know how to boil it down to a couple of words. I really don't yet. But they pay me handsomely, and I'm going to have to figure that shit out. You know what I'm saying? I mean, if I want to keep that job, I've got to figure out how to do what they're asking me to do. That's how I think that's the one that got worked for me today. And thanks for letting me share.
Every
time.
Yes,
will you
guys be talking with him? I will
do that. Point. No, okay. The second.
Okay. My name's Kyle, an alcoholic. I really liked your share, Leah. Especially the part about being grateful. You know, in this program, I've learned to be grateful. You know, not everything's peaches, you know, but everything's a learning experience. I work with my sponsor once a week. I'm in the Big Hood. And that's helping me, you know. like Bill was saying, I tried things my way so many times, and it's never worked out. So, actually giving this an honest chance, and I hope I get it right, because I have a family that loves me and turns from me, and they're rooting for me, you know. I admire you for having your daughter and being able to raise her, you know. Unfortunately, in my addiction, I missed out on a lot of my son's life, but I look forward to all the new births I'm going to experience with him. I just keep on this path I'm on, so that's all I got.
Come on, gentlemen.
We are out of time, unfortunately. Good to hear from so many people tonight.
The Valley Group encourages sponsorship and service to our fellowship.